Hey, roll up your pants. Here comes the colonel.
Oh, come on, crew. Give me a break, will you? This is a serious science program. Well, welcome back to the second half hour of The Promise of Tomorrow. Here on the Science News Radio Network, we explore the business of emerging science, nanotechnology, open innovation. I'm your host. I'm Colonel Mason. My co-host is Jack Bishop. We're going to get to him in just a minute with the second half hour program. And, at the end of the program, listener comments are the voice of reason. But right now, let's step over here to our fountain of useless information we keep here on the set. Oh, yes, yes, yes. Rummage around the coin jar just a minute for today's query.
Welcome to the fountain of useless information. How can I help?
Yes, we have awakened the spirit of the fountain who knows all, hears all, sees all, and tells all for a price. All right, oh, spirit of the fountain, how about a radio question for you? See how sharp you are and our audience is? What is the international radio code word for the letter F? The international radio code word for the letter F. What is it, O Spirit of the Fountain?
I have given you my answer. And now you may tell the other.
Aha! O Spirit of the Fountain knows his radio. He certainly does. The international code word for the letter F is Foxtrot. Yes, Foxtrot. Well, this is the fountain of useless information, so I guess we'll put up with this stuff. Anyway, back to Jack Bishop and this half hour's guest.
Once again, it's the Science News Network update of what's going on in technology and other things. You know, every now and again, we get a guest who is talking about something that I know absolutely nothing about. And that's what we have today. Vivita Zarita is our guest today, and we thank her for being with us. Vita, you're in Australia, and what I was wondering about, we seem to be hearing more and more things coming out of the world of technology in the Asian Rim. And one of the things that you're involved with is the development of electricity demand from ICT devices, in particular, internet-connected devices, for now and into the future. Is that right?
That's right. I'm working for the International Energy Agency.
Right.
We're located in Paris, so I'm lucky to be in Australia at the moment, but usually I'm in Europe. And this is one of the areas that we've been putting increasing attention on during the recent years, because we do see that this is an area where electricity demand is growing at a very rapid rate.
Now, from what I have read, and I must admit, I have not read an awful lot about this particular field, that what we used to call the third world is now the emerging nations on this planet, and the demand for technology and electricity and telephone service outstripping the capacity for many countries to deliver in a quick and timely manner. Now,
That is a scenario that we are looking into, because as countries are reaching an increasing level of development and also have a growing demand for all the devices, the electronics, and the services that are fueled by electricity use, we are seeing that particularly in these regions, we do have a rapidly growing electricity.
And as you said a little while ago, you're with the IEA. And when did the IEA come into being, and what is their task? What is their mission?
Well, the IEA, we were established in the late 1970s as a reaction to the oil crisis. And we're part of the OECD, the Organization for Economic Growth and Development, also based in Paris. And what we do, our primary concern at the IEA is energy security. So what we want to do is to develop the analysis, the research, to be able to inform our member governments and also beyond our member governments on how to establish policies and policy frameworks that make sure that we have secure, sustainable energy systems.
One of my chief criticisms of what we do in this country, I tend to think that when it comes to all of this, we have a very short-term and narrow view. And I was talking to a good friend of mine a few weeks ago, and we were talking about the fact that gasoline prices here in Texas, where we're based, had gone up, about 40 cents a gallon in the last 3 weeks. And I said to my friend, you know, it's very interesting to me that I saw a piece last year or the year before about how the Saudis are working with solar energy. And the gentleman who was the Saudi head of energy development said, Saudi Arabia wants to be into energy no matter what kind of energy. What do we need to do in this country to, one, get the average Jane or Joe to realize that our energy needs are growing all over the world, and that the U.S. has consumed per person more gallons of oil than almost anyone else, and that we need to kind of get, if not get a hand on our consumption, at least get a hand on the idea of developing more alternatives. What do we need to do to get the average person on the street to say, yeah, that makes sense?
Well, I'm a bit biased because I work in the field of energy efficiency. So my primary concern is to see that we think about energy efficiency first rather than focusing on just energy supply and new energy resources and new energy technologies, but first look at what can we do to use energy as smartly and as efficiently as possible so that we might be able to avoid investments in new generation. And when it comes to what can individuals do?
Yes.
It's a complicated area because energy demand is and energy use isn't something that you can see in the same way as when you're using other resources. You turn on the tap, the water is running, but when you have all your electronics and your things plugged in, they just draw electricity without you really paying much attention and without the average user really knowing how much is being drawn until at some point in time the electricity bill arrives. You might grumble a bit, but you pay and then continue using your electricity in the same way.
Now, you just shamed me into turning off a piece of equipment here in our studio that I wasn't using. You know, I looked over and said, well, why is that on? We don't need to use that right now. Now, energy efficiency, I see that now since you've explained it. That's really, really different than, developing new energy sources or maybe even energy conservation. What are some of the things that are on the drawing board that you're looking at?
Well, what we're looking at is within one of the projects that I've been working on and the topic that I wanted to delve into a bit deeper with you today, we're looking at electronics that are connected to networks. And what we're seeing is trends moving in the direction that more and more of the stuff that we have in homes and offices is being connected to internet or to local networks, which is an amazing thing in the terms of provision of new services. It means that your computer can go online and get all the updates you need. It means that the TV is connected to a network and you can record your favorite shows, make sure that you don't miss the beginning of the big match that you wanted to see. So a lot of really excellent and interesting functionalities are arising from this network connectivity and also energy efficiency opportunities because you can, through a smartphone, make sure that your thermostat settings are optimized, or if you go away and you're not sure if you've turned something off, you can easily, through an application, check and turn things off. So that's an area that increasingly will open up new functionalities, new services also for energy efficiency and could potentially make things easier for the end user so that you don't have to run around and turn things off. You can just optimize the settings to make sure that things are automatically powered down when you're not using it. But what we're also seeing is that this increased connectivity does have an increased does put increased pressure on energy demand because all these appliances need to be on to be able to be part of a network.
So what my dad used to tell me when I was a boy, he'd yell down the hallway, if you're going out of your room, turn that light off, was really something that I should have paid attention to. Now, one of the things that they asked me here at the Science News Network to talk to you about was, and I love this terminology, vampire electricity usage. Now, I'm going to assume that that's devices that draw a little bit of juice, and it's kind of like most of us think of it in the background, like our computer is on, but we're not using it, but it's just sitting over there churning. Am I right in assuming that's what we're talking about?
Exactly. You're exactly right. And this was an issue that came up already in the late 1980s. And what we saw is that there's an increasing use of standby power. And from a functionality perspective, standby power is a great thing. It means you can turn your TV off with a remote control, and you don't have to, when you want to power it up again, you don't have to wait for a long time. You just push the button on your remote control, and it's almost instantly on. But in order to deliver that, as you said, it needs to be a bit on and draw power continuously. And what we saw is that the power that's required to deliver that functionality was a bit higher than actually needed. When you compare different models of the same type of equipment, some were really efficient and some were drawing almost as much power as if they were really on and you were watching TV. And what we found is that in just a matter of a few decades, when this functionality got integrated into more and more products, the standby power consumption reached 1 to 2% of global electricity use, or 10% of residential electricity demand.
Now that is a shocking number, 10%, because I never think about my TV set drawing electricity when it's not on. Because
exactly,
you know, I turned it off with the remote control. Now I guess I better pay closer attention to that, because from what I read last week, that 1 watt, when calculated out over a year, is pretty staggering, isn't it?
That's true, but 1 watt is a great improvement to 14 or 20 watts
now
per hour being drawn over a year. And the 1 watt is an important number for the International Energy Agency, because following this research in the late 80s, what the IEA did in the late 90s was develop a 1 watt plan. So we called on governments for action to make sure that the standby electricity consumption for all appliances, all devices, wouldn't be higher than 1 watt. And what we saw is that once policies were put into place, it had a very rapid impact on the market, on device by device. And we saw that there was a big reduce in the energy demand. But
Go ahead.
Well, it's not the end of the story, but I'll continue after your question.
No, go ahead. What you're about to say is much more important than the thing I was going to ask you about.
Okay. Well, what we saw is that standby electricity demand didn't go down, irrespective of these great policies, because consumers were increasingly buying more electronics, and we saw also there was the emergence of network connectivity, so more and more devices were being connected to networks. And so they didn't even have the opportunity to power down. So when you turn something off that's connected to a network, it wouldn't power down to 1 watt, but it would stay almost on all the time to be able to deliver those features and functionalities that the network connectivity enables.
That instantaneous on that we all want
exactly.
With our television. One of the things,
and in some countries, we saw that standby power demand reached 16% of residential electricity demand.
What country reached 16%? As if I didn't know, but
The United Kingdom. There was a recent study looking at residential electricity demand.
Now we're not the most piggish in this country about using electricity.
Well, we haven't looked at all the countries in detail, but I expect that electricity demand from standby in the United States is around 10%, could be a bit more.
My granddaughter, who just recently got married and had to furnish a house, one of the things that she and her new husband concerned themselves with was the efficiency of the appliances that they were buying, the washer and dryer And when it came time for my wife and myself to replace ours here just a couple of weeks ago, she pounded on me. Get the most efficient one you can find, which I hope I did. But young people seem to get all of this much more readily, much sooner than old codgers like me. Are we teaching our young people to be better consumers? Because I thought that had gone by the boards.
I think so. I think that there is a growing awareness about the energy performance of appliances, and it's especially an important issue when you buy mobile devices, because then it's a question of battery life, which is you don't want to have a tablet or a mobile phone that you need to charge all the time. But it's also filtering through in regard to other appliances, and I think that there is a bigger awareness that the performance of your appliances and devices does have an impact on your electricity bill and does cause an impact on overall energy demand. So I'm very happy to hear that consumers are being much more aware and interested in this area.
Now, let me ask you this. What are some of the technologies that we're seeing over the horizon to give us greater efficiency?
As I mentioned, what we're seeing is an increased demand for network connectivity for devices that can connect to networks.
So the thing where you can see, you can use your cell phone or whatever and check to see if something's on, is that the big new thing?
It's part of a bigger new thing. We're seeing even in the USA, there's a growing deployment of smart meters. I don't know, do you have a smart meter yet?
I don't think so. I don't know whether my utility company has installed them yet. I'll have to take a look. What does a smart meter do?
Well, the smart meter measures your real-time electricity consumption. And it makes it easier for your utility to get that information that it needs to prepare your electricity bill. But it also, if it's linked up with a energy management system, then it gives you better control of understanding which of your appliances and devices are drawing electricity at what time. Then, taking it a step further, some products are being equipped with demand response functionalities, for instance, your air conditioner, which means that your utility could potentially power down your air conditioner a bit in situations when we're reaching a peak electricity demand. So we can avoid blackouts and avoid the additional generation needed to cover peak electricity demand.
And the United States, just like Australia, you know, our summers are brutal here in Texas.
And yes, I can imagine.
And just saving a few dollars on my electric bill would be a blessing, I assure you. The IEA is based in Paris.
Yes.
But you're in Australia.
Yes.
I'm going to ask, is there a reason you're in Australia now? Is that home for you?
It is home, but the reason I'm here is to participate in a conference on energy management in industry.
Now that...
So we're dealing not only with appliances and networks and ICT, but we also work with energy efficiency across a range of sectors.
Now that could be really exciting and breathtaking when we look at the commercial usage of electricity. And I'm going to ask you this question before we wrap up. When is the conference?
The conference is a workshop organized by the Australian government together with the Japanese government as part of an Energy Management Action Network project. And we'll be focusing on small and medium-sized manufacturing industries and how incentives and opportunities can be created to stimulate their interest and engagement with energy management.
Now, is that coming up or has it happened already?
That's coming up on the 27th of February.
27th of February. That would be just a week and a half from the day we're recording this program. So What I want to ask you is, after the conference, could one of the reporters from the Science News Network call you up, and can you give us a little thumbnail about the conference and who's and what was said and what was hoped for, and maybe a little peek behind the curtain at what you folks in the energy science business discussed? Would you do that for us?
Absolutely.
Very good. Now, one final question, and I thank you so much for spending all this time with us. You know, it has been a real delight. How did you get into this field? We always ask that to our women guests because, as you would imagine, we interview more men in the science field than we do women. And as the grandfather of five girls, some of which are just now beginning to think about a career, what can I tell them about getting into science?
I think that's definitely the area to be. I'm very concerned about environmental issues, and a career in science in the area I'm working with gives me an opportunity to conduct the type of analysis, develop the types of recommendations that help governments develop policies that make sure that we're more efficient, that it's easier for consumers to be more efficient, it's easier for industry, and that we collectively start thinking about more rational use of our limited resources.
Well, I've got to call an end to our discussion. It has been interesting and a lot of fun for me. Our guest has been Vita say your last name for me, because I knew I slandered it at the beginning of the show, so I want to get it right at least once.
Ruasita, Vita Ruasita.
And she is with the IEA, and we've been talking about the power that comes out of the plug in your wall. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you for having this opportunity. It was lovely to talk to you.
Lovely to talk to you, too.
And at this time, I want to thank you very much for those of you who have contributed to the this program. We depend on contributions from listeners like you for the existence of this show. We're totally science community supported. So those of you who have contributed, thank you very much. Those of you who wish to can do so at our website, promiseoftomorrow.biz. On the right-hand side of your screen, you'll see a little tab there for donations. Just click the donations, and we appreciate all your help.
And now, we make time for the voice of reason. Listener comments, ideas, and suggestions.
I'd like to say a few words about patents. When you're an inventor, it's an important thing to know about. You know, your ideas are good, but patents protect you from other people just using your ideas. If you don't use a patent attorney, you risk making a fatal error when writing the patent application. If you do use an attorney, you have to spend a lot of money. I chose to spend the money and sleep better at night. Now, the U.S. Patent Office has put online all patents since 1976, but not before that. If you want to learn about a field, reading patents is a great way to learn. It's important to see even very old patents on an invention, because old patents expired after 17 years, newer ones 20 years. So, if you can find an old patent on the thing that you're doing, then it's free to use, and then you can add to it, and then that becomes a patent. This is hard to believe. Google has scanned all 8 million U.S. patents that have ever been issued, and some of these patents are many pages long. And the Google patent site is free. This is Steve Shope. I'm a retired electrical engineer. I'm in Wakefield, Massachusetts, north of Boston. And I've been inventing things.
So you decide, has this really been the voice of reason? Listener comments are welcome at 214-329-4949. And please tell us your name and where you're from.
You've been listening to The Promise of Tomorrow with Colonel Mason, the definitive program on emerging and nanotechnologies, now archived and streamed on the web at promiseoftomorrow.biz. Join us next week at the same time as we learn more about the promise of tomorrow.
You live tomorrow, 'cause you know it will be there.